Recorded live from Space Ghost Podcast Studios in Melbourne, Florida, this is The Cannabis Report with Michael Patterson, episode number 2, brought to you by MGMC Pharma Group. We make a difference. Visit mgmc-group.com. Now, here's your host, Michael Patterson.
How's everybody doing?
Excited to be here. It's a great time having a podcast. Let me tell you, I've been on so many different podcasts, and I'm definitely glad to have my own show. Welcome to the Cannabis Report. I am Michael Patterson. If you're not familiar with my work in the cannabis space, I encourage you to go on LinkedIn. It's just Michael Patterson, U.S. Cannabis Pharmaceutical Research and Development. I've been in healthcare and management all my life. Been in cannabis now for over 8 years, and definitely excited to be here. Excited to go into our second episode. We're going to have a great guy on today, really expert in cannabis banking, named Ralph Kaiser with Integrated Compliance Solutions. But before we get to Ralph, I want to introduce my producer and brother, identical twin brother, Mark Patterson.
Better looking version of him.
That's a little stretch.
That's right. Seven minutes
I think
older.
It's a little stretch. Okay. And of course, our engineer,
Jesse.
We'll let
the viewers decide. Okay. Viewers decide.
So, one of the things we do want to have is we want to have some good time. We want to have some fun because we feel like everybody will learn more and have a great time. So with that, I want to turn us over to our first segment, which is going to be the news.
It's time for Cannabis News.
Episode number 2, Cannabis News. DEA issues final rule for licensing more growers of marijuana for research. The DEA in the U.S. revealed a long-awaited final rule aimed at expanding the number of authorized growers of marijuana to be used in scientific research. DEA responded to numerous public requests it received since then, breaking them down into 8 categories: application process and criteria, quality of marijuana, federal agency obligations pertaining to cannabis controls. Say that fast 5 times. The meaning of medical cannabis, security costs and requirements applicable to the manufacture of marijuana, harvest cost, yada, yada, yada. The list goes on and on.
And so with that, let me comment on that.
I'm not done yet.
Okay,
Mike.
Well, hurry up.
Okay.
Okay. I'm getting ready to talk.
All right. So the House legislation contains a key provision that would allow scientists to access cannabis from state legal dispensaries so they can study products that are actually being used by consumers in a retail market. So this is dramatically changed from in the past, because there was only a single facility at the University of Mississippi is authorized to grow cannabis through the National Institution of Drug Abuse. So now, Michael.
Oh, it's my turn.
Yes.
Can I talk now?
Go ahead.
So with this, the DEA, this has been going on for years and years and years. The DEA came out 2 years ago and started opening this application process that Mark mentioned on the report. The DEA drugged their feet for 2 years and did nothing. And through litigation, this is finally where we're getting to where we have multiple places. It makes a lot of sense if you can sit there and go to a state-run dispensary to get your cannabis, because I know the group in Mississippi. They actually have a location at the University of Mississippi, and their product is probably the worst product you could ever have. So it's very difficult to do studies. There's a lady named Sue Sicily. She's one of the researchers out of Arizona who's one of the first ones to do a large-scale study on PTSD with veterans, and she got her product through the U.S. government in Mississippi, and they would FedEx it to her.
But how are the strains? I mean, did they?
There aren't. Basically,
it's just like it hybrid. That's what you get.
They just, whatever they give you is what you get.
That's what you do to study.
And then when they send it, they showed us a picture. Sue showed me a picture, and it was literally like stems and seeds, and it was horrible. And the reason they do that is because they don't want you to get any data out of the plant. So they want to give you the crappiest product possible so you can't make any effort on it. And so one of the things the DEA has paid money for to study cannabis is you can do studies on cannabis as long as you're trying to show something negative. If you're trying to show something positive, they would not approve that study ever.
Right, but that's what we just talked about, the times that they are changing.
Well, slowly. So whatever the DEA says, then to me, just take it with a grain of salt, because their whole goal is to drag this out and to not do anything. And so part of their funding comes from cannabis eradication. And so their concern is if they get rid of cannabis or make it legal, then they're going to lose a lot of their funding. So it's something to watch. But also the companies who will get these contracts have already applied. They applied 2 years ago, and the DEA did not do anything yet. So if you're looking to apply for those, most of those applications have already been in, and I believe they're going to take the winners from those applications.
Well, there you go. So moving on, Montana lawmakers refuse request to fund marijuana program. So Montana lawmakers have turned down the State Department of Revenue's request for a $1.35 million to start a recreational marijuana program. The State Revenue Department had requested from the House Appropriations Committee over $1 million that would have been used to pay for 20 full-time employees, office equipment, and operating expenses to launch the state's recreational marijuana program before the department begins accepting licenses from businesses just this last October. So, basically, they're not funding this program, but a spokesperson for the State Revenue Department said it was committed to implementing the laws that are passed by the legislature.
Well, this law was not passed by the legislature. It was a constitutional amendment. And so it was a constitutional amendment to legalize recreational. So what you're seeing here, it's a Republican-controlled state, and the Republicans are saying that they're not going to approve any money being paid for this, even though the people of Montana voted for this. And this is one of the strategies that the prohibitionists have to be able to keep you from being able to do what the constitutional amendment says. So from my experience doing lobbying, what you see is you go up there and the legislators hate when the public tells them what to do. And by telling them what to do is through constitutional amendment. And so I've seen it firsthand to where they try to drag their feet and drag their feet. And so typically this is a situation when dealing with cash and dealing with getting the program started. So I think they'll eventually find a way to get this done. Another example of this, and Ralph, when he gets on, he'll talk probably a little bit about this in West Virginia. It took West Virginia, they passed their law in 2017, and they wasted 2 years because they said, well, there's no bank here who will take the money. And so they waited 2 years until a bank finally stepped up, and so delayed the entire program in West Virginia for 2 years. So looking at that, if you're listening to this overseas or outside the United States, think about your government and think about if they do approve this, how are you going to be able to make sure to get those funds? Start thinking about what they're going to try to do to block you ahead of time. So that's one of the reasons we try to tell you these stories, is so when it does happen in your area, you're prepared.
Well, you know, it brings me to this story. I have a friend of mine. She's an older lady, probably in her 60s, and she was visiting Florida, and she's from Tennessee, and she has found that 5 to 10 milligrams of cannabis taken with her drink at night, she can sleep because she's got a bad knee. And just the fact that it's just becoming more and more commonplace in Montana, trying to fight the kind of the will of the people, and eventually that curtain will fall,
right?
Basically.
And that's what you're saying, is that the cannabis movement has been done by the will of the people. It's millions of people around the world who have stepped up and said, we're not doing this anymore. We're moving forward, whether you like it or not. And so 2021, you're going to start to see that a lot. You're going to see New Jersey was one of the states that legalized. And so if you're not unfamiliar with where New Jersey sits in the United States, it's attached to many states. And so now it's gotten to the point where it's unenforceable, meaning if you're in New Jersey, you can drive into New Jersey and get recreational cannabis starting later this year or early 2022. And if you're in New York or Pennsylvania or Delaware, you can't police this. So now we're getting to a situation where these laws are unenforceable in states where cannabis is not legal recreationally. And so you're going to see more and more states starting to legalize this. So you're going to see what I call a Northeast domino, from Maine all the way down to Maryland and Delaware. They're going to legalize recreational. And then eventually it'll be pushed down through the South and the Midwest. But legalization is coming. It's coming. It's kind of piecemealed right now. And that's what a little bit we'll talk about with Ralph about the banking side. But it's definitely coming.
Well, a new article from NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, cannabis abstinence associated with alcohol substitution by young people. Shocker. A team of investigators affiliated with the Harvard Medical School, Loyola University, and the University of Miami assessed alcohol consumption patterns in a group of non-treatment-seeking cannabis consumers between the ages of 14 and 25. All participants acknowledged having consumed alcohol in the month prior to the enrollment of the study. The study participants were randomly assigned to two groups, one that required cannabis abstinence for 4 weeks and ones that did not. Researchers reported that over 60% of those assigned to the abstinence group increased their frequency of alcohol consumption as well as the quantity consumed. Following their completion of the study, participants' use of alcohol returned to pre-trial levels. By contrast, those participants who were permitted to continue consuming cannabis did not increase their alcohol use over the length of the study.
And it's interesting that you see this across the board, because remember, the politician's view was like, oh, if you make it legal, everybody's going to get addicted and everybody's going to, you know, the world's going to end, the sky's going to fall. And so as you're fighting this battle in your neck of the woods, always focus on the data. And this is that normal study, is that basically saying that people didn't seek out more cannabis. They sought out more alcohol. If you look at the psychological effects of alcohol long term, with dementia, all the physical problems with liver damage, the list goes on and on and on. And so cannabis has never killed anybody in human history. Through our body's endocannabinoid system, our body uses cannabinoids, which are in cannabis. They're actually accepted by our system in our DNA. And so it's something that we're predisposed to accept as a medicine, as cannabis, and not alcohol.
So it's delicious and nutritious.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. That's it for me on the news. Back to you, Mike.
All right, so now we're coming into our great interview with Ralph Kaiser. So what I want to do is have Mark introduce Ralph.
Our guest today hails from the Great White North, Canada, where sorry and out and about is included in the talk track of the cannabis industry. This 5'9", 77-kilogram seed-to-bank compliance partner hails from Fort Saskatchewan, Alberta. And as a CEO, the CEO, ladies and gentlemen, of Integrated Compliance Solutions, the largest merchant processor of CBD online stores in the U.S. When this 30-year veteran of the investment and banking industry isn't turning the banking world green, he enjoys the super exciting sport of ice fishing, as well as playing the trumpet and spending time with his wife of 29 years and his three sons. His favorite saying is stop talking and put in the work. So I guess I need to stop talking and introduce the maple syrup Mountie himself, Ralph Kaiser.
Big Ralph, welcome to the show, buddy.
Woo! What's up,
Big
buddy?
Man. Well, I tell you, Mark, that is the greatest introduction that I have ever had.
Good.
Ever. Okay. Thank you for that. Appreciate being with you both.
You're very welcome.
Well, Ralph, the first question, this is a toughie.
Yes.
Do you have a life-size
statue?
It's true
or false, Mike.
Oh, sorry.
True or false?
True or false. Do you have a life-size statue of Wayne Gretzky in your house?
No, I don't have a life-size statue of Wayne, but I did used to, you know, a little point of interest. I did used to actually do some work for him on his golf tournament while he was still here in Edmonton. And even though he's been away from Edmonton for many, many years, he is still the greatest, not only, of course, on the ice, the great one on the ice, but he's still very much active in the Edmonton community. We all love him.
Okay, great. I think he's, you know, I thought he's in L.A. now, or he's been in the States for a while.
He
was with Coyote, yeah. the Phoenix Coyotes for a little while. But regardless of that, it's great to have you on the show. And what I was hoping you could start with is we want to get into cannabis banking and all that.
But wait a sec. Before we do that, we had a story off air that he was going to tell
us. Oh, yeah, that's right. We forgot about the ice fishing.
Yes.
A story?
So you had, we need to understand how. So a lot of us who are not in cold weather climates, we're in Florida.
Don't get a lot of ice fishing down
you
here.
You got to tell us about the ice fishing and how that all works.
Right. That story you're going to tell us.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to, because this is actually one of the greatest Canadian pastimes,
right,
of course, which is ice fishing. And a lot of Hollywood movies have leveraged that aspect of Canadian culture. So just before the holidays, my son and I, Zachary, my youngest, who's 19, yeah, he's a fisherman as well, loves it. We decided to rent an ice fishing shack for two nights and go ice fishing. Now, I use the term shack in, you know, loosely, let's put it that way. It came with a big screen TV, surround sound stereo system,
really?
Bunk beds, stove, all of that. You don't need a fridge in an ice fishing shack.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
Right? But we just had a ball fishing for 2 days straight and two nights straight. But the most we can tell all the fish stories, but the greatest aspect of ice fishing is the ice sounds, which range from almost whale-like sounds to explosions. Mm-hmm. And when one of those explosions occur, like at 2:30 a.m., you come out of that, you come out of your sleeping bag, out of those bunk beds pretty fast. But it's amazing. It's a fun time, whether you're Canadian or whatever. It's something everybody should try.
And, that's, you know, right. I mean, if you would have had a curling court right beside it, you would have been in, like, Canadian nirvana.
Well, hey, Mark, that's exactly – it's not so much curling. There's ice skating going on. People drive on the ice because the ice right now is about 18 inches, almost 2 feet thick. So you can drive on with any vehicle. But there's quads, there's snowmobiles. It's like a little town, a little village. But it's a great thing to do during this whole COVID thing, because as long as you've got, you know, people that you're close to and in your household within the shack or the tents, it's great. In fact, a lot of the sporting goods stores here are completely sold out of ice fishing equipment.
Sold out.
That's what people are doing.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah, did you catch anything?
Yeah.
We did. We actually caught a number of pike, and then we caught something called burbot. And burbot is the poor man's lobster.
Okay.
We caught it during the night. So there I am outside of the ice shack, and you can keep them. You can clean a certain amount of them you can keep. And we caught not even close to our limit and cleaned one up and did that at 2:30 a.m. and had a feast of burbot. Poor man's lobster.
That's great. I see, learning something new every day. I never knew about that burbot. I didn't even know that was a fish. That was great.
It's a fish.
So talk to us a little bit about ICS, and then we'll move into we'll talk about the actual banking in America and North America, around the world with cannabis, and how that all works.
Love to. My favorite topic. Thanks, Big M. ICS, or Integrated Compliance Solutions. We're headquartered in Las Vegas. We started back in 2014, and we're the longest standing cannabis banking, compliance, and hemp-derived CBD merchant processor in the U.S., having been used by more CBD and more cannabis-related businesses, and certainly by more financial institutions than many of our peers on the street today. And we work with financial institutions to provide the end-to-end compliance program, including a software as a solution program to allow them to accept cannabis-related businesses and meet all of the regulatory requirements that they have to do. So on the ICS side of it, that's really what we focus in on as our main business. And then in 2018, we acquired Greenlight Payments out of California. Greenlight Payments is a merchant processing switch and processor. And we right now are one of the premier CBD online merchant processors in the U.S. And then last year in 2019, and we closed the deal in 2020, we acquired Sterling Compliance out of Pittsburgh, which is a traditional bank compliance training and consulting firm. They work with many different financial institutions across the U.S. So the common theme amongst ICS, Greenlight Payments, and Sterling is, of course, the financial institutions as our main focus and our main clientele. But we work with a lot of merchants in the cannabis world for providing them with various banking and payment processing.
So with that, let's move into cannabis banking, because as you know, a lot of people are unfamiliar with it. You hear things from you cannot bank at all, to where the system is all cash based and there's no way to use any type of debit or credit card. So if you can kind of give us the overview of kind of what's going on in America specifically right now, and then what is the future?
Well, we wake up in the morning, we might read the headlines that the sector, you can't get banking, or it's underbanked, or financial institutions cannot bank cannabis-related businesses. And that is a myth, because Back in 2014, FinCEN, or the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network of the U.S. Treasury, they put some guidelines in place that allow any financial institution to accept a cannabis-related business as a client, just as long as they meet those guidelines and they do all the enhanced due diligence and the necessary monitoring for a financial institute or for the and monitoring of the cannabis-related businesses, they can take them on, Michael. So it is a challenge. There's some heavy lifting that has to be done. And of course, there's this dichotomy, which is federally it's illegal. We have it still as a Schedule I substance, yet many, many states are legalizing it. So it's that dichotomy between federal law and state law that these financial institutions have to work their way through. But to my knowledge, there has not been a single financial institution that has received a consent order or has really gotten into regulatory issue by just accepting cannabis-related businesses as clients. Where there have been issues for financial institutions is, number one, if they don't know they're banking a cannabis-related business, examiners, the regulators don't like that. Mm-hmm. Or they don't have the necessary infrastructure, which is the monitoring, the enhanced due diligence, and everything in place. And on the ICS, or Integrated Compliance Solutions, aspect of our business, Michael, that's what we do. We work with the financial institutions to ensure that they have all of those, aspects in place and the entire compliance program in place.
So with that, if you could help our listeners and viewers understand, when you and your team go talk to a bank, what is their knowledge base on the cannabis industry?
It's like no other business. Mm. It's like any other business, I should say, or it's like any consumer. This industry, even though the plant in and of itself is old, this is new to business.
Right.
And that's one of the things that we have to understand, whether it's a financial institution, whether it is an insurance company, a payroll company, there is a steep learning curve about the industry, about the plant, and whether it's historical. I mean, there's a lot of stigma attached to the plant and to the cannabis operators and the history that's associated with it. So that has to be overcome through an educational process. And certainly, whether it's the risk compliance people and staff and team at a financial institution, whether it's their C-suite individuals, right up to the board, is an educational process that has to happen.
And one of the things that I know, so Ralph and I know each other for about 3-4 years, and Ralph and I met on LinkedIn. And so I keep telling people, LinkedIn. Cannabis is the social media platform for the cannabis and hemp industry is LinkedIn. So Ralph and I were at the MJ BizCon show in Vegas in 2018. And so he was part of a group that had a hospitality area. They rented a hotel and everything. So I go to visit Ralph and his team, and we're sitting there talking, and Ralph goes, I'm sorry, Michael, I can't talk anymore. I have to handle these banks that are interested in signing up. And so I turn around, and the line was probably 100 feet long with different banks who are so interested in talking to Ralph and his team. So if you can kind of give us an idea of what type of banks are the ones who are currently signing up to take this cannabis dollars here in the States?
There's not necessarily a common theme amongst the financial institutions. Certainly some of the credit unions have certainly done an excellent job of stepping up. But it's really the individual financial institution first understanding what the opportunity is in banking this sector. And a lot of them back their way into it by having one of their existing commercial clients that want to get into the sector. They're either investing or they're actually going to get a license for cultivation or distribution or processing or whatever it is. But it's not only a matter of educating them on the plant, as we had just discussed, but the opportunity as a whole. I mean, we've helped financial institutions increase their bottom line by anywhere between 6% to almost 27%.
Wow.
By accepting cannabis-related businesses.
Green is good.
Clients. Yeah, the green is good. And that's really where the opportunity for bank executives and shareholders and board members to really understand that, firstly, the risks can be controlled. We help the financial institutions communicate with the regulators and do all that's necessary to, of course, set that up. But the profitability is just enormous that can come from successfully banking this sector. And that gets back to the opportunity.
So we've been talking macro. I want to go a little micro. A friend of mine was in Colorado, and he was able to pay for cannabis with his debit card. We live in Florida, and that is not a possibility. So how do those differences work? You know, how does that – why can you use it there and not in Florida?
Yeah, that's a great question. So because right now cannabis, particularly marijuana, is a Schedule I substance, Visa, MasterCard, and the networks as such, right, do not allow for transactions of THC products through their networks. That has to be understood. So when somebody's accepting certain types of branded cards or credit cards, as a result of the of Visa and MasterCard particularly stating, no, we don't allow that, other alternative payment solutions have developed. And some of these can be a little questionable as to whether they really are allowed, whether they meet regulatory requirements, whether they would meet the network rules and regulations. And some of them, unfortunately, even attempt to mask the transaction as not being necessarily coming from a dispensary or transacting a THC product. So yeah, Mark, that's what I mean by alternative payment solutions have come about, but each one of those would have to be reviewed by the dispensary as well as their corresponding bank that to make sure that they are compliant.
So with that, you know, debit, you and I have talked about debit you can do when the system, depending on who the bank is and so forth and so on. Explain to us about the credit card side. So I know they can't do the merchant processors, but how are you able to do a debit transaction and not do a credit transaction?
Well, that has to be looked at as well from a branded perspective, right? Because a lot of the debit cards are even branded to the specific network companies. And these network companies do not want to be associated on the THC side of it. So there's some question marks around that. What can be done is a cash transaction, certainly in cash format. And we know there's lots of challenges to the industry accepting cash only. But there's also mobile wallets that are ACH based. They are a cash mechanism for payment, and they can be allowed certainly as well.
Venmo, Apple Pay, stuff like that, Zelle.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. And then it really depends on the mobile wallet mark provider as to whether they accept cannabis related or particularly marijuana related transactions through their wallet. And we're actually just about to launch an ACH based mobile wallet with a partner of ours. But it's not just a payment solution. It's a full on retail analytics, consumer behavior application for dispensary owners. And this wallet has actually helped dispensary owners increase their sales by up to 40%.
Wow.
Through capabilities like hyper geo-targeting, gamification, loyalty program, SMS, email marketing, and it's for brands, consumers, as well as dispensary owners. And it's all encompassing, not just a payment solution.
And it's pretty impressive, and you know, just listening to you talk, and if people have never really understood that the banking side of this industry, it just goes to show you it is very complicated, but we're getting to the point where we're starting to get some decent systems, even though it's federally illegal, through companies like yours and very, very few others are actually in this space. And then can you tell us a little bit, cryptocurrency starts coming up. It's like, oh, I can pay with crypto, I can do this, I can do that. Give us a little insight on how is crypto now in the space and where you see that moving.
Yeah, crypto or blockchain in general, this is a great technology that is in its infancy, needs to be considered, needs to be looked at. There are some payment solutions out there that are alternative payment solutions that are blockchain based. And no different than the other ones that I mentioned, you know, some of these cashless ATMs or point of banking systems. It's just really the individual owners of the dispensary and then their bank that they're banking with. They have to do the necessary due diligence to ensure that those payment systems, these alternative payment systems that are looking to be used, are compliant. Are they compliant with any of the networks that the transactions are run through? Are they compliant with the bank to make sure that the financial institution can do the necessary tracking of those transactions? So that's what I say. It's about the homework. It is really about doing that due diligence. And the banking on the cannabis side of it, more and more financial institutions are coming into accepting CRBs or cannabis-related businesses as clients. So the banking is out there, but just imagine, you know, what most businesses take for granted. Some cannabis banks or some cannabis related businesses cannot find that cannabis bank.
I know.
So that's a challenge. You know, payroll becomes a challenge. Mm-hmm. Insurance becomes a challenge. You're running an all cash business, which has higher costs associated with it. There's a safety issue. All of those things that other businesses take for granted is what can be a challenge for a cannabis-related business.
And I agree 100%. And then last question. Tell us a little bit about the international market with banking and cannabis, and where do you see it now, and then where do you see it going?
Yeah, it really depends, Michael, on the jurisdiction. Mm. And right now, of course, the U.S. is in this dichotomy of federal versus state. They did a great job back in 2014, the regulators putting in place the FinCEN guidelines to at least bridge that gap. But then other locations, other jurisdictions where it's fully legal, they haven't had necessarily those banking challenges. But even where it's fully legal, there is still a robust black market. So even in certain states, you know, you and I have talked about, yep. What is it now? I think some of the analytics companies state about 80% of all sales in California are,
yep,
still illicit sales. Mm-hmm. Massachusetts is sitting at about 70%. So even in these legal states, Canada, fully legal and still about 70% of all sales in Canada are illicit sales. Regardless of the jurisdiction, those illicit sale funds cannot find their way into the banking system. That is particularly of great importance in the United States, very great importance in Canada here, certainly as well. And that's where the tracking and making sure that and the appropriate monitoring is put into place by the financial institutions to ensure those black market funds do not make their way in.
Yeah, you can't have it where you have a company. And, you know, I've been approached probably four or five times with people wanting to put investment into some of our investment opportunities. And they said, we've got all this cash and we would like to invest in you. I was like, well, I need to understand where that cash came from. And they're like, well, some of them are being honest. Hey, it was from illegal sales. And I'm like, well, I can't take it. So if you're looking, nope, to a cannabis-based business and you're going to take in illegal cash, I would strongly recommend not to do that because it will come back to you. And then you will be the poster child that the governments will come back and say, this is what you don't do. And because there's still a lot of groups out there who do not like cannabis, a lot in the government, as we talked about earlier in the show. So you don't want to be that that outlier that they can make an example of in a negative aspect. But Ralph, this is awesome. You being on the show. Thank you so much. Please let everybody know where they can get a hold of you.
Well, certainly, you mentioned LinkedIn. You and I are all over LinkedIn, right. So they can certainly reach out to me personally there. They can reach out to us at www.icslvisinvictor.com on our website. We're happy to talk to those that are in the cannabis industry, whether a financial institution or those that may be challenged on the payment side of it or challenged on the banking side of it. We're here to help them out.
Awesome. Guys, give it up for Ralph Kaiser with Integrated Compliance Solutions. Thank you so much, Ralph.
Always great talking to the Maple Syrup Mountie.
My pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Good talking to you. So, Mark, move us over to the Entrepreneur Tip.
The Cannabis Entrepreneur Tip of the Day.
Cannabis Entrepreneur Tip of the Day brought to you by U.S. Cannabis Pharmaceutical Research and Development, moving society forward through legalized cannabis. Visit uscprd.com.
All right, Cannabis Tip of the Day is discipline. So a lot of people come to me on LinkedIn and they're like, well, you know, why do you do what you do and how did you do it and so forth and so on. And looking back and when you start, you don't always know, you know, how you're doing and what you're doing and what are the things that are making you successful. But one of the things I look back and realize is it's discipline. I started over 12 years ago, starting working on my physical fitness. I did amateur bodybuilding for a while. That really taught me the discipline about not just working out, but food and getting the right types of food and making sure that your body's in tune, and then working on that schedule and going out and getting up at 5 a.m. to go exercise. And at the time, I didn't realize what that was doing for me, but it was teaching me discipline. Because if you're going to be an entrepreneur in this business, you really have to have that physical discipline in order to maximize different opportunities. Because if you treat your body like terribly and not eat the right things, then you're not going to have the energy to be able to do the certain things that you want to do. And one of the things that I noticed is going out and speaking around the world is when you go to these other countries and you don't have the physical energy, or you get sick in a foreign country, specifically dealing with COVID now, it could be a very big issue. Also, discipline deals with your scheduling. You're not going to be able to go out and do all the fun stuff that your friends do and maybe not watch the game all the time. You know, so those are the things where you have to put in the work that other people won't do. So cannabis tip of the day is definitely discipline.
There you go. Heard it from Michael Powers himself. Now we move on to Jesse, the Cannabis Champion of the Week.
The Cannabis Champion of the Week.
Cannabis Champion of the Week brought to you by World CBD Awards 2021 in Barcelona, Spain. For more information, go to worldcbdawards.com.
All right, so our Cannabis Champion of the Day of the Week is Heather Shuker, and Heather is out of Pennsylvania. You can find Heather on LinkedIn. It's just Heather, and her last name is Shuker, S-H-U-K-E-R. So Heather Shuker knows what it is to brighten a child's life. She is a mother of a beautiful young lady, Hannah, who just recently turned 17. For her birthday is a milestone. Hannah has severe intractable epilepsy and has suffered well over 100,000 seizures since she was 4 months old. Hannah's prognosis was grim, and Heather was told there was a good chance that her daughter would not live to be a teenager. For Heather, this was never considered to be acceptable. Hannah has been through numerous treatments, and a little over 5 years ago, a doctor told her that Hannah was out of viable medical treatment options. Every day, Heather faces the true reality that she could lose her daughter. She's a high risk for sudden unexplained death from epilepsy, which is SUDEP. She learned of medical cannabis when there was nowhere else to turn, and she decided it was worth trying for this treatment for Hannah. This major roadblock was still illegal at the time in Pennsylvania. And Heather set out to advocate for medical cannabis in Pennsylvania through a group called Campaign for Compassion, a group group of 10 mothers who, in a grassroots effort, successfully advocated and educated for medical cannabis reform in Pennsylvania. Heather was quoted as saying, "We came together with a mission to legalize medical cannabis in Pennsylvania and refused to take no for an answer. We spent countless days at the Capitol in Harrisonburg advocating. We attended town hall meetings and sent videos to legislatures of our children's lives. Hannah participated in this every step of the way, traveling back and forth to Harrisburg many times. This is the most challenging 5 years for the both of them. 2.5 years after Heather began advocating for the compassionate use of medical care, Pennsylvania created her law, the law which now medical cannabis is legal in the state of Pennsylvania with over 200,000 medical cannabis patients." So I want to give a shout out to Heather Shooker for her ability to move this forward for everybody in Pennsylvania and everybody around the world.
Fantastic. We need more people like her in order to move this forward, to move the movement itself. We've seen a lot of success. And Mike, how do you think the Biden administration is going to treat cannabis?
The Biden administration is definitely interested in moving cannabis forward, but Biden specifically, you know, has come out and he still claims to want more research. And so what we're trying to do with our company, U.S. Cannabis, is really work through other organizations such as the Florida Hemp Council to see what we can do to educate the Biden administration on a bipartisan committee in order to legalize cannabis. We need to focus on areas such as insurance. If this is legal federally, you're going to have Medicare and Medicaid. We need to focus on taxes. We need to focus on international trade. We need to focus on basic standards, lab testing, processing of the product, is to make sure it meets medical quality standards. So there's a lot of things that we need to look at to make sure this is done well. Another thing is social equity. How are we going to divide this pie up? Is it all going to be big pharma, or are we going to continue to allow entrepreneurs, which we recommend you have to have a path for both. So there's a lot of different avenues that we're going to have to come up with in that respect. But I want to thank everybody. That's the end of our show today, and I really appreciate you joining our show. And please send this out to others that you see. We want to get the biggest following we can. Just a reminder, when you follow the show, you're part of the Compassionate Army. If you see hashtag Compassionate Army or hashtag CA30K on LinkedIn, we are all part of this. We are moving this forward as a populace to really change these rules and laws. And that's the way it is in the world of cannabis today. The power of change is within all of us. The world changes when we change. I had a great time, and I hope you did as well. And always remember, we are all we need. Till next time.